I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And if you're one of our minions, this is your hellish, extended, very hot, ad-free version of the show. The second, in fact, of our two CES specials. On the last episode, we cavorted with angels in CES heaven, but we've had our wings removed and we've plummeted into the depths of hell, ready to explore the very worst, or rather at least the easiest things to pick apart of the consumer electronic show's offerings this year. Joining us later, you may recognise her from laughs such as this one. Or maybe this one.
Sorry, I had to really stop myself from giggling when you talked about the company making feces out of soybean paste.
But you'll find out her name when she says words later in the programme. That's enough hyperbole anyway, I think. Basically, we're going to talk about the weird and the terrible of the show this year. If you haven't listened to episode 1, CES Heaven, that's where you'll find our best of the best of the best, sir. And thank you to our patrons, of course, supporting us all through our adventures in hell and in heaven. Ian.
Hello.
You're back. Welcome.
I suppose technically I never really went away.
A little bit like a cold sore.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You never really get rid of the virus.
Well, first, a reminder of this year's themes from CES, which were, of course, that 8K TVs were here, whether we're ready for them or not, and that folding tablets are the new folding phones. It was also a year of cars, and more cars, with everyone from Mercedes to Sony showcasing their visions of our automotive destinies. But I think we should start with TVs, Ian. Mm. And I can't in good conscience put 8K under the subheading of ridiculous or hellish, because obviously 8K is going to happen, and the best TVs that we see every year at CES are always about 10 years premature of their mass adoption of the same technology. Just look at 4K. They've been around for years. We still barely have any mainstream broadcasts in 4K, and instead we're relying on the likes of Netflix and games consoles for most of our 4K content. So instead...
Well, also relevant, there've been a lot of micro LED demos this year at CES, I believe, and that is years away. So that backs up exactly what you just said.
Well, instead then, I want to pick out a particular product and a particular, well, hopefully not a particular trend started by this product, which is Samsung's Xero. And this is a 43-inch TV set designed to mirror your phone, including, and in fact specifically, vertical YouTube and TikTok videos, according to a CNET write-up. CNET said that this portrait-orientated television is actually the default setting for the set. But Xero has this integrated motorized mount thing that rotates the screen back and forth between landscape and portrait, controlled by a button on the TV's remote or via an app. And if you own a Samsung Galaxy phone, you can actually sync it up with the TV so the screen flips in and out of vertical or portrait, vertical or horizontal, depending on how you're holding your phone, which seems just guaranteed to go wrong and to be rotating halfway around when actually you're just trying to look at your phone in portrait or vice versa.
You remember what phones are like with this kind of thing. They don't exactly get it right often, do they?
No. Very, very well. Yeah, exactly. They've got a little bit a better, but it's far from perfect. But the Xero, Samsung says, will ship later this year. Pricing was not announced. But my main fear with this is, and we touched upon this very briefly, I think, on the last episode with Andy, is that it encourages people to think that vertical video is okay, which it is not. Let's face it.
No.
For the vast majority of purposes, it is not. So what is your take on this one, Ian?
Well, it's annoying, isn't it? Because I kind of feel like we've lost the argument on this. I mean, there are so many apps that actively encourage people to shoot vertically. And I get it. You know, it's more convenient to hold your phone that way and to shoot in that way. But it's that it's just phones. It's not even better on tablets, really. It's much more convenient, I find, to hold a tablet in landscape mode and to use it that way. So, but now we've clearly lost the battle because apps like Snapchat, TikTok, Instagram, I guess, Twitter, all vaguely encourage the use of vertical video. And now Samsung's basically admitting that that's a problem and is going to make TVs that twist. But again, it's not going to solve the problem because it's only Samsung doing it. Not everyone's going to do it. No one's going to want, most people are not going to want to pay for a TV that rotates into portrait mode. They're going to see it as pointless and annoying, and there endeth the argument as far as I'm concerned. Although the TV itself doesn't look that bad, actually, from a design point of view.
The TV is well designed and it looks very nice, and I'm sure the picture is excellent. But it reminds me a little bit of the curved TVs that we saw a massive trend of for a while. LG and Samsung, in fact, I remember being at a CES once, both said world's first curved something or other television. And I asked both the PR people at each one and they said, yeah, whatever.
That's the thing. Curved TVs never made any sense because you do not sit in one space to watch the TV. If you have a sofa, I've sat on your sofa, it's a big sofa. I imagine that you do not precisely sit in the middle of it every time you want to watch TV.
I do if I'm listening to music specifically because I want to be in the sweet spot between the two speakers.
That's fair enough. But music listening is often a solo pursuit, right? It's not the sort of thing, I mean, I don't know about you and Kate, but you know, so you might have very different musical tastes and therefore you might fancy a little listen to stereo music on your own, but it might not want to involve your partner in that. TV, on the other hand, is more often, I would say, a joint activity, not exclusively. So the curved TV thing, if you sat anywhere but in the sweet spot, it just made no sense. It added very little anyway. My computer monitor is still, I believe, technically curved, although you'd struggle to actually tell, really. But it's a computer monitor. You sit in front of it every time and it's always the same and it makes some sense. But it's not an extreme curve by any stretch of the imagination. So, yes, good parallel there. It's a good parallel.
I just don't want people to accept a vertical orientation. It's wrong. We would need to rebuild our houses around this. You know, rooms are not taller than they are wide usually, and that's good for televisions because they fit in the same way that some fish will grow to the size of their enclosures, such is the case with a television. And there was a great line in a Simpsons episode many, many years ago, I think it was Homer, who said something like, if you don't have a TV, what does all your furniture point at? And I thought that there's a great bit of truth in that because so much about our homes are designed around the fact, particularly now, that we have very large TVs and we put them on wide walls. If we start having to consider how high the walls are going to be, then it's just a vision of complete disaster as far as the future is concerned. In my opinion, some may say that's an exaggeration. Those people are wrong.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, we see wide, don't we? We don't see as much at the top and the bottom as we do in width. And humans are obviously evolved to have good peripheral vision, which means that if you're a good filmmaker, you're probably making your film where so that stuff is happening at the outside that you're very sort of you're slightly aware of, and that your eye is drawn to what's in the middle because that is it fits exactly the way that humans have evolved to be. Very aware of things happening on the outside. Your eyes are very sensitive to movement on the left and right of your vision. They're not particularly sensitive to detail in that area. And then when you get into the middle, you've got much better focus and stuff like that. So it makes perfect sense. And yes, and it annoys me greatly that this stupid vertical thing has been given credibility, if you will, because you don't see as much. And if you were to try and shoot a drama or a sitcom in vertical, it would look ridiculous. You would get one person in at any one time. There would be absolutely no detail in the outside edges. All you would see is floor and ceiling, and it is pointless. I don't understand why it's difficult for people to hold a phone horizontally. It's no more difficult, really, than holding it horizontally. And, you know, you get a much nicer result as a result.
Thank you. I'm glad we agree on this. So if you can just sort yourselves out, please, and stop shooting videos vertically and stop thinking that a vertical orientated TV is correct, you're going to have to rebuild your house. And frankly, you're going to have to rebuild the fabric of society, which has been built around, at best, 4x3 aspect ratio TVs, which is still wider than it is tall, a bit like Paul Daniel's head was. But now we're in 16:9, and movies are shot in, like, you know, 2:1 at the moment. Netflix seems to have gone for this 2:1 aspect ratio. So let's just leave it at that, please. No more vertical televisions, thank you. It's time to welcome a special guest to the show, someone with whom for years at Wired I discussed a delightful array of questionable innovations designed and devised by individuals living on the fringes of polite society. You may remember her from such stories as the company that will bake your dead relative's ashes into vinyl records, or the woman who injected horse blood into herself for art, and knock knock, who's there? A company making feces out of soybean paste for other people to test the power of a toilet's flush with. Today, though, she's editor of Tech Investigations at NBC News, my very good friend, Olivia Solon. Hey, Liv.
Sorry, I had to really stop myself from giggling when you talked about the company making feces out of soybean paste.
I couldn't not invite you for a chat on this episode of the show, since we're talking about weird stuff at CES. It's the second of two episodes. The first was all very good things. This is all very weird things. And particularly, I saw a tweet from you ahead of this show, ahead of CES, that is, in which you predicted that we'd see, and I'm quoting here, internet-connected tampons that will leak your personal data in new and horrifying ways, the internet of sausages, some kind of cycling service, a Peloton for pets, an AI-powered Shiwi, and I like this one even probably the most, shoes as a service. Because some of these actually existed. I mean, not least of which, plates and plates of fake meat that inexplicably apparently count as a tech product. So even though you were joking, I think, for the large part with some of those predictions, it was still something that translated into reality. So I thought we should bat around one or two of your highlights.
Well, I mean, I was totally joking when I wrote about the internet connected tampon on Twitter, but then almost immediately, people were like messaging me saying that this exists. There's a company called MyFlow. I don't actually think it was at CES this year, but I thought it's worth talking about a little bit. But it's called MyFlow. Supposedly, it's like a Bluetooth-connected tampon that helps women understand when they need to change said personal sanitary product. And they ended up needing a 12-inch string connecting to a waistband, an app, and then some kind of monitor that you also wear on a waistband. And so, you know, as an alternative to just changing the damn thing every few hours, you have to have all these extra accoutrements just so you can then track your flow, I guess. Simple.
I find what's particularly surprising about that, though, is that you would need a cable. I mean, I thought the whole idea of something being wireless would be that for an intimate product such as that, the lack of wires is kind of a big part of the appeal.
Yeah, I honestly think it's a troll product. I think it's one of those things that will never see the light of day. But they had the first version did not have this long string attachment. And then the second one supposedly did. They claimed that they'd prototyped it and they were trying to make money on GoFundMe or Kickstarter or one of those ones. But frankly, I think it was, I don't think that's ever going to see the light of day, frankly.
Well, what definitely did see the light of day was this was fake meat. And I know that this is something that you've actually written about extensively before now. And I think it was Impossible Foods, isn't it, that had the fake pork. And I saw a write-up from a Verge reporter at CES this year who described the taste of the meat as spongy. And I thought that's just not a word that you want to describe something delicious. So what was your take on fake meat being at a tech show in this way?
You know what? Like, I feel like the sort of, we've run out of genuine tech
innovations at these shows, and there's just so many incremental changes or adding, you know, making something smart unnecessarily, or, you know, I don't know, adding facial recognition to something. And so they have to like branch out a bit into the broader field of innovation, I guess, you know, in the same way that Wired used to cover tech and then Lab Meat. So it's one of those like PR grabbing moves. I think it's I think it sounds absolutely revolting what they've come up with. But I don't know. Have you ever had it? I've never eaten any of these. I've eaten like the Impossible Burger, but I haven't had any. Haven't had any of this.
I haven't had any of this either. I mean, I'm a brilliant market for something like this because I find food to be a massive inconvenience. Both my wife and I are subscribers to Huel, and we eat Huel very, very regularly. In fact, Kate literally yesterday just had a new delivery of her Huel. So these kind of fake meats or alternative foods are right up my street, but I've not been able to try any of these new ones. I just wonder, where do you draw the line between like quality meat and highly processed food? Because I always sort of think the more processed something is, the less you should be eating it. Whereas the whole idea with this is that you should be replacing meat, actual meat, with it. I just found it a little bit hard to contend with.
Well, that's the thing. There's like the environmental argument, and then there's the sort of health argument. And I think in terms of sort of how many ingredients do you want in a single item of food, with the fake meats, you're getting like all sorts of weird stuff put in there to make it taste like real meat. And you kind of wonder whether if you don't want to eat real meat, you should be like looking at more tasty vegetarian things, for example. But I don't know. That's a kind of debate that will, I'm sure, go on for many years. But I personally would rather have just like a well-raised bit of meat and just eat much less frequently. But each to their own.
So if you were asked to pick a trend or an item or a product or an idea that emerged from this year's CES that you would qualify as quote-unquote odd, what else? What would you pick? What stands out to you? Because Ian and I have been talking so far on the program about some of our highlights, but I'm curious just to really hear your take.
Okay, I haven't heard your highlights, so this is going to be interesting. But there are a couple of things that stood out to me. I mean, as silly more than as being like good trends, but obviously adding facial recognition to everything. I don't know if you saw. I mean, I'm sure you did, but there was this cat litter tray that used cat facial recognition so that you could tell which cat was pooping and peeing in the litter box.
I did.
And it was like a Taiwanese company called Lulu Pet that made it. And it had also built-in stool and urine image recognition. And it was supposed to help you monitor the health of cats. And I thought this was absurd and was, again, mocking this on social media. But a bunch of cat owners kind of got back to me and were like, actually, if your cat has gastro or urinary problems, this is incredibly useful. So I stand corrected.
I need to run that by Kate, really, being a veterinary nurse, because she may very well have strong opinions on that too. So perhaps I'll come back to that. But I think the product itself is indicative of where the industry is going anyway, which is we've run out of, you know, products that we use very frequently to make smart. So we now turn to the next level, which is things for our pets or things for our, well, garden. Haven't seen a lot of garden tech this year, actually, but pets was definitely a highlight. I saw a wearable dog coat that I think was able to said it was able to determine your dog's moods and stress levels, which struck me as the kind of thing you see on Dragon's Den or Shark Tank in the US, that's really included as a kind of, and finally, in the world of bizarre ideas.
Yeah. Well, similarly, a thing that really annoyed me was Charmin, the loo roll black brand, made a bunch of kind of basically products designed purely to generate PR stories, which is fine. I think it's very entrepreneurial of them. But they made this toilet roll delivery robot that supposedly meant to kind of bring you an emergency toilet roll in your moment of need.
But you just can't help wondering that if you have the foresight and the funds to buy a toilet roll delivery robot, you probably have time to buy like a 12-pack of Loo Roll and to put it into your bathroom instead.
Well, the thing I find most interesting about that concept is that I don't know about you, and I'm certainly not asking, but if I'm going in for something that may require a toilet roll, I tend to shut and lock the door from the inside.
Yeah.
And I find it hard to believe that a robot is going to be capable of traversing such an obstacle.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. Yes, exactly.
Can you just hear it knocking against the door and like, hello, sir, I have brought you a spare roll. May I come in, please?
They also made like a smell detector, didn't they, in the same suite of products, yeah. So maybe the robot would then be like, phew!
Oh my goodness. But you know what? With that, I mean, as someone who's just had an entire new bathroom installed, with that, I could see the point. If you had something with like a pressure detector in a toilet where it detected that the pressure had been relieved from you sitting on it for, say, 30 seconds, it could do a little atmospheric sampling. And if it determined the air quality to be less than pure, it could perhaps spray a deodorant of kinds. Like, I think something like that could be a very useful little product. I still think it's probably much better to just have a spray, but whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I have like a big problem with air freshener spray anyway. I think it's better just to like let the natural smells dissipate than like adding synthetic smells on top of the smell. Unless you're in like a public place and you're embarrassed, but in your own home. Come on, people.
Well, was there anything else that stood out that you wanted to mention before I let you get back to your morning over there in San Francisco?
I mean, it was only one thing, but I'm sure you guys have probably would talk about it, is the rotating TV that Samsung made that was supposed to allow you to play horizontal, vertical videos.
We did talk about that at the top of the show, but what's your takeaway on that one?
I just think it's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, yes. Come on, if you're going to watch things, if you're shooting and watching things on your phone, it doesn't mean you want to watch them in the same way on your TV. Maybe I'm just a Luddite.
Well, my concern is that it normalizes and desensitizes people to thinking that they should be comfortable recording video in portrait orientation. You should not.
I mean, Nate, you've lost that debate big time with social media these days, but fair enough.
I just go to a lot of gigs and I think, do you realize how many more band members you would get if you just turned your damn phone around?
I know, but you'd still then, they'd be so small if you then wanted to upload that to Snapchat or TikTok. So, yeah. Do you actually see anything that was really good?
Yeah, I mean, we spent the entirety of the last episode talking about things that we liked with Andy from CNET. So there were a lot of good things. And I particularly liked a lot of the advancements for technology for tablet computers. You know, right. I really think that this year we saw a lot of products that blurred the line between what is a tablet and what is a laptop, whether that's a folding tablet that is classed as a laptop, or whether it's cases for a tablet that turn it basically into a laptop complete with a trackpad. That was a trend I personally very much liked. But other than that, I think it's CES like any other CES. Well, thank you, Liv, for taking the time out of your morning to join us. Is there anything you've been working on outside of the confines of the bizarre and the unusual that you wish people to check out?
Yeah, probably the latest story that I worked on was about swatting, which I'm sure most of your listeners will know is a form of harassment where someone makes a fake 911 or 999 call. It's worse in the US because you call up, you say there's a mass shooting or a hostage situation or a bomb threat at someone's address, and this triggers an armed response from the police. In the US, their SWAT teams. And so it can be a very scary and intimidating way to harass someone. And a couple of years ago, someone was actually shot and killed by the police after a SWATting call that stemmed from an argument over Call of Duty. So I've been looking at this issue, and it turns out that some of the police departments in the US, including Seattle, are developing like anti-swatting protocols to try and combat this form of harassment so that they don't just treat it as a hoax or a prank, because it can be fatal. And so what they're doing is allowing like gamers, activists, journalists, people of color, even like tech execs to pre-register their home address or any address that they think is a swatting risk.
So that when someone calls in with a 911 or 999 call to that address, police treat it in an entirely different way. I mean, they'll respond in case it is a real issue, but they will respond with more caution and won't necessarily go in with guns blazing. And I just think it's super interesting. We spoke to a bunch of people who'd been swatted and talked about the you know, what that meant for them and how terrifying it can be. But also that there are ways to kind of clamp down on it. And even though it's a very low stakes thing to do for the harasser to do, like you just have to make a phone call, it can have a huge impact on the victim. And it's good to see police actually taking it seriously.
Well, for anyone who wants to check that out, and I strongly recommend it, there is a link in the MP3 description. So if you pull up the app you're listening to this on your phone, you should be able to find a link straight to that story and read it or bookmark it for later. Or if not, obviously, you can go to uktechshow.com, find episode 189 of Text Message, this episode, and you'll find a link to it there. Ian, let's drive things up a little bit, shall we?
Oh, good.
Yeah. The cars of CES, I think, need to be taken down a peg or two, a notch or two, or a scotch. You can choose the measurement. And this really comes off the back of one of your rants via text messages to me about Mercedes. You were not very keen on this so-called AVA car. DZine, I saw, had a good write-up of this and said Mercedes-Benz revealed its take on a vehicle as a, and this is a quote, a living creature with the Vision AVTR concept, which takes design cues from a film from 10 years ago, Avatar. And the concept car embodies the German car's brand, or rather its vision of what mobility is going to look like in the distant future, blah, blah, blah. But it includes scales and a crab-like movement, DZine wrote. It has a total, in fact, of 33 so-called bionic flaps that are embedded into the back of the vehicle to emulate the scales of reptiles. And then these scales apparently communicate information to the driver and to the car's surrounding environment via subtle flowing gestures, whatever the hell that means. So, Ian, explain to me, please, why does this grind your gears so much?
Because it makes no sense at all. Like, what information is it conveying to walking passers-by? It doesn't make any sense. It's no one walking around is going to be paying attention to the cars in that level of detail that they're going to get anything useful. Like, what? It's moving? Yeah, we can see that because it's moving. It just makes no sense. And using James Cameron for help, I mean, there could not be a worse person in the entire world, apart from perhaps Homer Simpson from when he did that thing with the car. And this is not dissimilar to that. You know, you just end up with a complete mess. The Avatar is terrible. I can't understand why anyone would want to base anything off it at all. I don't even know why it exists as a film. But of course, this goes to the, and I'm sure I've ranted about this before, but car concepts are a disaster. They are obviously the way that they keep people employed in the design studios at car companies. They're like, okay, yeah, sure, you're going to have to design yet another box from this, you know, in exactly the same way, because car design is always based on things like aerodynamics, and because it's very important these days that we have economic cars that that are not wasting fuel. So therefore, design is mandated by airflow, which helps cars be more efficient just by virtue of how they're designed. So people sitting in these design studios are like, I'm just going to tweak last year's model. I'll put the lights slightly higher and they'll be a bit more eye-ish or whatever. And they're bored. They're bored all year. And then CES comes around and Mercedes are like, you know what? You have at it. Do us the most stupid car you can think of. We'll build it out of wax or whatever they do. It's actually clay usually. Turn it into some high-priced concept that will literally never see the light of day, or maybe in this case, I don't know, turn up in a film or something. I mean, it won't, but who knows. I really do not see the point of it. I don't understand why CES has been hijacked by these ridiculous concepts. It irks me more than I can efficiently state.
Yes.
How do you feel about it?
Well, I have mixed views on this as a in general. The Mercedes particular model doesn't bother me too much. Mercedes has had concept cars at CES in the past, and at a car show, if you go to the Frankfurt Auto Show or something, there are tons of concept cars. They're all over the place, so they don't stand out as much. I think they stand out more at CES because it's a tech show, and historically you've had car companies there showing off products that go inside of cars, whether that's been hi-fis and navigation systems and what have you. But now we're seeing not only more and more elaborate concepts being shown off and taking some of the attention away from really quality products like vertically oriented TVs and toilet roll robots, but also you then have the likes of Sony showing off cars. You know, so we've gone from it being a tech show where the car companies are showing off tech to now it being a tech show where actual tech companies are trying to show off cars. And I just think it's, you know, let's keep these things separate, people, for mostly because I don't care about cars, and obviously CES only exists to titillate me. So let's remove them, please.
No, it doesn't. And I mean, cars being at CES makes a lot of sense because the car industry has suffered for a very long time with technology. These are people who obviously do not understand the kind of tech that is now commonplace. So, you know, when you got in a car 10 years ago, you would be presented with a stereo that would be, you know, it wouldn't be the sort of thing you'd ever want to have in your house. And also they're subject to delays in that, you know, car development starts a very long time ago and the electronics decisions tend to be made very early on in that for some reason. I don't know why. But it's also very difficult, you know, designing tech for cars is not like designing a phone. These are systems that have to be very carefully thought out, because if you get it wrong, there is potential to actually end a life, because, you know, if you've tied your car stereo into the rest of the computers in the car, which I don't imagine they would do, but if you did do that, you could end up with some very real problems. And so it sort of makes sense in a way, and CES should be about demonstrating new technologies. And I suppose you made a good point that Samsung TV actually there is a reason for that. It has been thought out very clearly. It does meet a need. Whereas this car, the only need I can see it meeting, and I'm looking at a photograph of it now, and those scale things at the back are revolting.
Can you describe them for the purposes of audio?
They are, so imagine where the back window of a car would usually be. It's very similar to that. And they are these sort of circles of varying sizes, and they have articulated arms underneath them that seem to raise these scales up out of holes. Now, we'd probably be aware of the fear of non-concentric holes, tryptophobia or something like that, which some people claim to have. It's not a really properly recognized phobia, but it is. There are certain things in nature where you look at them and you feel that's a bit gross. And this car, it embodies that for me and unsettles me. And I hate it. I hate everything about it.
I mean, there's a line in the BBC write-up for this story that I loved because it goes against almost everything you would normally associate with a car. It is thus, the car has no steering wheel or engine, but features movable reptilian scales, a wooden floor, transparent doors, and an infotainment system operated by gesture. None of that sounds like anything I want to be in. Certainly not now.
There are certainly a lot of gesture-based systems in cars these days, and I can. That's the only bit of it but it already exists. It's not so much of a concept, more of something that already is a thing. The idea being that when you're driving, you don't want to be distracted by twiddling a knob, perhaps. But if someone calls you and your phone is paired with the Bluetooth in the car, you know, swiping it away with a hand is a more natural gesture, perhaps, that doesn't require you pressing a sort of reject button on a screen. That is somewhat of a there is a point to that.
I would be worried more though if you know, in a situation like that where there's a potential for death, if somebody, let's say, releases a potent and unexpected gust and you waft your hand to try and divert some of the odor and the miasma out of the window, but the car interprets that as quickly turn left, then you're not only going to have an awful smell on your hands, but potentially the blood and organs of a loved one, which is just horrible.
Yeah. And we mentioned the Sony idea, but looking at that, it makes much more sense. It's much more of a sort of serviceable car, and I do think that's the difference between tech concepts and automotive concepts, in that tech concepts seem to be something that might turn up in the next couple of years. But actually, if you were very rich, you could put it into production now and it would make some sense. And all of the stuff in the Sony one sort of said a lot about Sony's sort of ideas. And, you know, there was 360 degree reality audio. Now, when I went to CES last year, that was something they were demonstrating in headphones and it was very good. And so you can sort of see it makes sense. But, you know, other companies, car companies just seem to lose their minds.
Well, Sony did have the common sense, at least, to put a steering wheel in its car. Although I have to say that the steering wheel's days, or perhaps years, are numbered. So I wouldn't strike it on the record against Mercedes for not having one. But the car looks more like a car that you would actually go out and buy, whereas the Mercedes one looks a bit more like a PR stunt for the next four of James Cameron's movies. But Sony also didn't say exactly whether it had any plans to put this on sale. It is very much a prototype. It was designed to show off the firm's its sensors and as you say, the in-car entertainment stuff.
Well,
and I'm glad for that, because Sony has a horrible reputation of making proprietary technologies, and I would sort of fear that, you know, this would only run on Sony branded roads or have a filling system that was only compatible with Sony branded electricity, for example.
Well, I mean, you say that, but that is actually a problem in electric car charging. You know, there are various ways of doing electric car charging, and Tesla has its superchargers, for example, which you would not be able to use on another car. So we are probably only, yeah, and that's fine for Tesla, because that's the ecosystem is built around you using a Tesla charger for your Tesla. It kind of works, and obviously they paid for it, so why the hell wouldn't they? And it doesn't stop anyone else from having more traditional electric car charging points. But the Sony one, you could literally put into production tomorrow and it would make sense, and you could buy it and you could drive it, and I like it, and it looks like a normal car, and it has some good stuff in it, from what I can tell from the very brief look over it that I've seen. And also, you know, in terms of automation, one of the things that car companies were worried about a couple of years ago when I was at CES was, what would you do when your car is driving itself? Therefore, entertainment in the car becomes a much bigger problem. You want to have people who, you know, or either productivity or entertainment. So you have a setup that enables you to get stuff done or enjoy yourself while you're driving around. So I can actually see the Sony idea being sort of, there is a reason behind it again.
That's a very logical point, and I think we'll end the conversation on that salient bit of commentary. If you have any thoughts on this, of course, do let us know. hello@uktechshow.com. Any views on concept cars showing off at CES, very welcome. And feel free to disagree with any of our well-researched and highly informed points. Well, it's time to check in with Tom Merritt of Daily Tech News Show, who's got an appropriately flavoured message for us on this episode. Tom.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, we cover the whole pantheon of CES, from the bliss of those 8K televisions and sleep aids to the torment of weird concept cars with eyes in the rear and the need for an exoskeleton to critique your exercising. All that and a load of smart home devices and smart toothbrushes and more as we cover the length and breadth of CES 2020 at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Very much enjoyed Tom's description from last week's CES show. I thought that was extraordinarily well worded and cautious.
He was, yes, for those of you who haven't listened to CES Heaven last week, we did also include Tom's message about his experience with Japanese toilets. And yeah, I agree, he should win an award for his tact and decorum in discussing that. So well done, Tom, and thank you for the promo this week. Thank you in particular as well also to our patrons supporting us every week at patreon.com/UK Tech. They get ad-free versions and extended versions of each week's show, and also extra message, which this week we've got a great extra message going out a couple of days after this episode goes out, where Ian and I talk about some of our adventures from CES shows in the past, and really just what's involved in covering these and other shows like it as a journalist over the years, and how it's evolved and some of the mishaps that we've got in. So if you want to get that is just for patrons. You can get it now, as well as I think certainly over 20 extra messages that we've done over the last few months. So check those out, patreon.com/UK Tech. Ian, it's been a pleasure. As always, my friend, yes. I will speak to you very soon, I am sure. But do you have one final word? You can have the last word on the show this week.
Fran Japan.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.